Being a baseball play-by-play broadcaster demands a blend of learned mechanics, intense preparation, and a calm sense of entertainment. How hard is it to do this job? Let's talk to the ones who do it. This is Matt Spiegel. My new podcast, The PBP, Voices of Baseball, will bring those conversations to you as the best working and former broadcasters tell you why and how they do it. New episodes come every Thursday all summer long. Follow The PBP, Voices of Baseball, on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Introducing L2R, smarter, safer, faster.com, your solution to combat the negative effects of sitting at a desk. Sitting at a desk 8 hours a day is as harmful as smoking. If you're stuck at a desk all day, you don't need to quit your job. You need to join our Desk to 5K program. No running experience is required. As a doctor of physical therapy, I'll be honored to guide you every step of the way to reach your running and fitness goals. Let's conquer running together and make it enjoyable. Visit L2R, smarter, safer, faster.com and start moving today.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Happy 4th of July. Happy holiday weekend. This is one of my favorite holidays, one of my favorite events, one of my favorite weekends when it falls on a weekend of the entire year, because I love red, white, and blue. Love seeing all the extra flags that pop up around my neighborhood in different places that I drive, with all of its quirks and with all of its challenges and even the problems that we create ourselves as a society. I still believe far and away this is the greatest country in the world and the only one that I would ever want to call home. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Coming up more on the start of NBA free agency, Marcus Smart speaks for the first time about getting traded out of Boston, essentially blindsided, and other moves that maybe raise eyebrows, plus Shohei and his sidekick, is it fair to call Mike Trout a sidekick? Shohei and his sidekick are at it again. We've got the pitchers for the All-Star game. So we got the starters late last week. Now we have the pitchers, and the rosters include Clayton Kershaw, of course. Did you know the Atlanta Braves are about to take over as the best team in Major League Baseball? They are reeling in the Rays. And then Wimbledon on the horizon. So a lot to talk about on this edition of After Hours, but it was history for Chicago and for NASCAR in its 75th year as the sport celebrates its 75th anniversary. The entire sport had been building up for a race like no other. The sport had never seen street racing, but definitely not in downtown Chicago with that skyline and the backdrop that made it so visually appealing, but visibly freaking cool. So from Chicago, we are pleased to welcome Chris Knight, who is the owner and insider for Catch Fence, follows the NASCAR circuit, the Cup circuit, all over the country. And here we are about dead center of this 2023 season with this iconic moment and really a ton of buzz around Chicago, even going back to when the announcement was made a year ago. So, Chris, thank you for joining us on the holiday weekend. First time ever for NASCAR, first time for Chicago, first time for street racing. You were there. You got to witness it all. What will you take away from it?
I will take away that NASCAR pulled off one of the most unbelievable race events of not only this season, but probably the last 75 years, right? Because To put the NASCAR Xfinity and Cup Series on the streets of Chicago was something I had never thought I would ever see in my lifetime. And for them to do that and to overcome the rain that the track experienced or the circuit experienced on Sunday, and then for everything to clear out, you know, right close to race time. I know we were a little bit delayed to get the green flag, but once we got the green flag, fans and the motorsports world was treated to an absolutely unbelievable event, as something that just keeps your goosebumps flowing even after hours at the checker flag has come. And to see a driver, you know, with Justin Marks' Project 91 initiative and a driver from, across the world come over and win the NASCAR Cup Series Grant Park 220 for the first time, you know, it was just unbelievable.
When you talk about how special and how iconic and how unique and also how historic, what made it that way? What was so amazing about being there on the streets of Chicago?
Well, I think people were skeptical about how well NASCAR would put this event together, right? And how would the people of Chicago react to it, right? And Julie Giese and her entire NASCAR team, hats off to them, because they put on not only a incredible weekend, but a incredible week of events leading up to the races this weekend in Chicago. It was event after event. The fans came out into the thousands, and fans were cheering and high-fiving and just capturing an unbelievable moment for the sport. And I think it really opened up the door, Amy, for NASCAR to look in another direction and say, hey, we can not only do this in Chicago, but we can have the opportunity to have a NASCAR street course race throughout the country or even throughout the world. I mean, the opportunities are endless, knowing that they were able to pull this off, and they were troubled by weather. They conquered the weather and then wound up having an incredible race. Shane Van Gisdenhuizen did an absolutely great job coming back through the field. You know, he's trapped by strategy, and for him to come through the field in his first ever race and to win and beat the guys like Chase Elliott, Kyle Larson, Kyle Busch, Austin Cindric, the Daytona 500 champion from 2022, you know, just unbelievable what we were able to witness on Sunday.
It was pouring before they dropped the green flag. And actually, I guess they had him out there for a few laps under caution.
Yeah.
Initially, we saw a bunch of cars spinning out, hitting tires, losing control. Yeah. Ultimately, how did the weather impact what we saw on Sunday?
Well, I think they made the track treacherous to start the race, right? We started on the wet weather package, which is, you know, obviously a tire that's inducive to racing on a wet pavement, right? And so we started the race in the wet, and obviously it was treacherous, and I think people were you know, maybe going a little bit faster or taking chances that they probably shouldn't have been taking so early into the race. But thankfully, Amy, the track was able to dry out much before the halfway point of the race. And once, you know, we got to that point of the race where they were switching from treaded tires to the standard slick tires, we saw unbelievable opportunities. We saw drivers, you know, making passes and putting themselves in position. And ultimately, you know, because of starting the race late, we had to unfortunately shorten the event by about 25 laps or so.
Right.
But still, that intensity built up because you knew the end of the race was coming, and it offered so much strategy. And you were just on the edge of your seat wondering what was going to happen next. And to see Shane come back through the field. And we all thought Justin Haley and Austin Dillon and Chase Elliott, we thought the race was going to boil down to those three guys. And here comes Shane in the track house car, and he blows them all down, and he did it so cleanly for his first ever Cup Series race. It was really a magical day for that organization. And what Justin Marks and Pitbull have done for the sport and bringing this project to the forefront with Kimi Räikkönen and, you know, Shane and who knows who's next, right? NASCAR's in a really great place right now, and I can't wait to see what's in the future for the sport.
We're so excited to welcome Chris Knight back to the show. His enthusiasm is what we love about him, and he is co-owner of Catch Fence, but also has been covering NASCAR for a long time and is there in Chicago after the Grant Park 220. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. It's never happened, not in my lifetime, not in your lifetime, that a guy making his debut in NASCAR in the Cup Series has been able to pull off a win.
It hasn't happened since 1960.
But then the fact that, as you point out, it's a global perspective where maybe street racing and the road racing is more common in parts of Europe and other parts of the world, and to be able to treat the fans to such an incredible finish once the track had dried out, all of that makes this race even better than just the concept, because it actually worked.
Yeah, it did work, and it worked well, and it worked great. And Shane, you know, we called him SVG for short, you know, over the last couple weekends as we gotten to know him. He brought a world audience with him, right? You know, he's a three-time VA Supercar champion. That's the same kind of racing that Marcus Ambrose did, and he came to NASCAR for a long time. Marcus Ambrose had a successful career, won in the Cup Series, won in the Xfinity Series. But for Shane to come over here and adapt as quickly as he did, and he had when you have Darian Grubb and you have Justin Marks and you have the teammates of Daniel Suarez and Ross Chastain behind you, but for Shane to hop in that car with no experience in a Cup car, and him to adapt to a street course, it just played into his wheelhouse, I think, a street course. And I think the drivers all seem to have fun. I don't think they wanted the race to end, but unfortunately it had to end because we got close to darkness. But I think, you know, the drivers got so accustomed to racing it. And, of course, we've had, you know, different forms of road course racing over the last couple of years with the Roval being introduced at Charlotte Motor Speedway. But this street course racing, it was just something, it was breathtaking to see these Cup cars and these Xfinity cars racing, you know, and they had the pier and Lake Michigan, you know, behind them and beside them, and just the backdrop of the buildings of Chicago. It was just, if you weren't there, you still felt it, whether you're at home or listening on the radio or watching the races on TV. And if you were there, it was something that you'll never forget.
Well, good. I'd love you to expand a little more on driver reaction. What did they have to say about this event?
You know, I've heard that, you know, from the drivers that were interviewed, it was all positive. It was very positive. You know, obviously there were some drivers that were frustrated because they felt like that maybe NASCAR waited a little bit too long to tell them that the race was going to end, and it ultimately hindered their strategy. So there were some backlash on that, but I don't think that's neither here nor there, because Shane was put in that same position as someone like Christopher Bell, who challenged for the race win early in the race. But Shane was able to conquer that strategy and win. But overall, just the vibe, and you could see it, Amy, on social media after the races when the drivers went to their social platforms and were just embracing this race and talking about how much they enjoyed it and can we do it next year. And, you know, the fans turn. I think the fans is what really made this event, right? Despite the heavy rain, despite the potential for, you know, just miserable conditions for most of the day,
right,
the fans still packed the house. And when they packed the house and they were able to see such a great race unfold, you could just feel that electricity when the checker flag flew. Nobody wanted to leave. They were just there to enjoy it, and they didn't care about the rain, and they didn't care about, you know, having clothes drenched. All they cared about was seeing a part of history unfold on the streets of Chicago, and I think that's something that we'll all take away for weeks and even months to come.
I got to tell you, it was a little jarring, though, to see them racing through puddles. Like, there was standing water the streets as they started, and that was different as someone who's grown up watching NASCAR, where generally they've had to dry the entire track before they could get cars out there.
I applaud NASCAR because they did a great job. Yes, there was some areas of standing water, but for the most part, the track was in really great shape. The circuit was in really great shape. And I applaud NASCAR. And the drivers, you know, NASCAR asked the drivers and the spotters and the teams if they were okay to go racing.
Mm.
And they all gave them the thumbs up, right? And so you had some drivers had some trouble early in the race. I know, you know, Kyle Busch had some problems and Noah Gregson had some issues and Keselowski and Eric Jones. But I think that it was those guys just overstepping the limit of what the cars were capable of doing that early in the race until the track got drier. And once that track got dry, you just saw mistakes happen because people were being more aggressive, mm-hmm. and they realized that the end of the race was coming. And so I think that's what the intensity built up, and I think that led to a lot of the electricity that the event happened. But, Amy, we've been able to take this wet weather package, and we go to places like North Wilkesboro and Martinsville, the short tracks on the ovals, and to be able to compete in a damp condition, I just think that it's grown volumes that we never would have thought that NASCAR would be in a place to do that for years and years ago. And now that we're able to go on a street course or a road course and even the smaller ovals and compete on a damp surface, I just think that speaks how far NASCAR has come within the last couple of years.
Oh, absolutely. It's a total shift and change in terms of logistics. Makes it possible for NASCAR to avoid some of the rainouts that are so frustrating for fans, but also the TV broadcast rights. Chris Knight of Catch Fence is with us from Chicago in the wake of the Grant Park 220. Even the name sounds cool. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. What type of logistics made this possible? Because we're talking about downtown Chicago, Chris.
Yeah.
It's not like they had a stadium with a street race set up inside of it. No, this was actually clearing out a major portion of downtown Chicago.
And it started several weeks ago. And Amy, the track didn't get finished until overnight on Friday night, you know, ahead of the first practice sessions for Xfinity on Saturday, right? But I think a lot of it has to do with the team that NASCAR had in place. They brought Julie Giese over from being the Phoenix Raceway president, and her job was to oversee the Chicago event, and she did a great job logistically. I thought the course was very entertaining. It had fast parts, it had slow parts, and it had twists and turns. It was not an easy event to put on, but I think that they were smart and they were methodical about how they could make this race so great, right? Not only, I know a lot of this got hindered because of the weather, but they had so many concerts lined up for the race weekend. So it wasn't just about coming to the streets of Chicago to watch cars on the racetrack. It was coming to see some of the best music artists in the country right now playing during an event weekend. And it was an opportunity for, you know, just everyday people and or fans, new fans and old fans and current fans, just to embrace a contagious atmosphere. And I think the logistics, you know, they were difficult, but they worked. And they've already started to disassemble the track tonight so they can get back to the business already, you know, early this week with it being the 4th of July week.
Right.
But I think it proved that they can, you know, just more like they've done with the Coliseum at the LA Coliseum, that they can build a race course in a relatively short period of time and then put on a phenomenal show and then take it down just as quick.
And the 75th anniversary of NASCAR, what a cool way to be able to celebrate with the Chicago backdrop. And this announcement was made, what, over a year ago. So the logistics, the planning, they were massive, as you point out, Chris. What have you heard about moving forward and doing this again, whether it's in Chicago or somewhere else?
I would be very shocked, Amy, if we do not go back. I know that there was talk about that the opportunity was there for NASCAR if it was a successful weekend. And by all accounts, even despite the rain and the cancellation of the concerts, this was a successful weekend and put on a successful race for the NASCAR Cup Series. And I would expect the Cup Series to be back at the streets of Chicago and for other cities to be calling NASCAR around the country and saying, hey, we want you to come take a look at our downtown, Detroit, New York. There's so many good Miami streets of Miami, Vegas, even, if they're going to put Formula One at Vegas, why can't we go race in the streets of Las Vegas with NASCAR, So I just think that the successfulness of this event just opens the door wide open. And I'm excited to see what's in store for the sport, not only in 2024, but in the future.
All right. So Chris, before I let you go, what's the next big thing coming up in NASCAR?
I think a lot of people are excited to go back to the Indianapolis road course in August. And then obviously Daytona is coming up at the end of the summer to set the tone for the playoffs. As far as new tracks, we don't really have any other new tracks on the circuit other than just getting ready for the playoffs. But I tell you what, Amy, we've had a lot of interest from other drivers of other disciplines throughout the country and throughout the world. And it would not surprise me if because of what Shane pulled off on Sunday afternoon, if we don't start seeing some other drivers come knocking on our door wanting to be a part of this great sport.
So SVG is what he's called, but Shane Von Giesbergen. It just sounds like a NASCAR name.
I know, right? And he's a great guy. He really is a great guy. He's very tall, one of the tallest drivers that we've ever had in NASCAR. But when Chase Elliott goes out and said, man, that guy is fast, you realize that what he did wasn't just a fluke. He's a talented race car driver.
Well, and as you point out, because of his global appeal and because this was so cool, this event was so cool, there will be other drivers who are attracted to it, similar to the way that the Brickyard attracts drivers of various disciplines, and Daytona does as well, because those are iconic events, and this one, history in NASCAR's 75th year. So you want to find Chris Knight on Twitter at Knighter, K-N-I-G-H, TER01. He covers NASCAR, follows them all over the country for Catch Fence, and we're glad to have him back on the show again. I love how excited you are about it. Glad you got a chance to experience it, Chris. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Amy. Takes care, and thank you for having me on. Hope to talk to you soon.
It was the perfect weekend to host it as well, as much as local Chicagoans may not have wanted to give up their Grant Park streets and Grant Park in general. Chris is someone that we had not had on the show since 2020, but I remember even then his enthusiasm for the sport and his passion for covering it. So good intel. And if they start to move it around, think about some of the cities, some of the metros where you have well-known stretches of road or sections of the city. He mentioned a few, which could be set apart, which could be designed and twisted into a road course. I'd love it. Absolutely. on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Thanks for hanging out with us on part of your holiday weekend. We're here for the duration. Straight ahead, baseball is also here for the duration of the holiday, counting the days until the All-Star breaks. We've got the pitchers as well as fireworks, of course, coming from a duo that certainly is always capable of producing them. And the Atlanta Braves are about to overtake the Rays for best record in baseball. Could that happen by the 4th? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours.
Introducing L2R, smarter, safer, faster.com. Your solution to combat the negative effects of sitting at a desk. Sitting at a desk 8 hours a day is as harmful as smoking. If you're stuck at a desk all day, you don't need to quit your job. You need to join our Desk to 5K program. No running experience is required. As a doctor of physical therapy, I'll be honored to guide you every step of the way to reach your running and fitness goals. Let's conquer running together and make it enjoyable. Visit L2R, smarter, safer, faster.com and start moving today.
Podcast.
Drives the ball deep out into left center field. That one's carrying, and it is Trout of here. He jumped all over that pitch there from Gallen. Here's the next pitch. Shohei hits one a mile deep out there into right field. Boy, that went right through the catwalk there that the fans enter and exit down the right side. They're running down there to try and retrieve that baseball. That's another big-time blast, and here on this Sunday, once again, it's showtime.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Well, to be fair, it wasn't just Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout who go deep for the Angels on Sunday. Also, Mickey Moniak had a three-run shot in the second, and the Angels get by the Arizona Diamondbacks. Even though Zach Gallen, now an All-Star, had a dozen strikeouts. 30th time in their 6 years together that Ohtani and Trout go deep in the same game. 8th already this year. And maybe you thought those home runs were wasted a lot of the time because the Angels just can't sustain winning for the most part, have been unable to sustain winning for the most part. But actually, they're 7-1 this season when both go deep and 21-9 overall. Those are your Angels nerd alerts. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Now, the Angels kind of hit the skids a little bit, still definitely in the mix, but had lost 6 of their last 10, have fallen back behind the Astros now into third place with the Rangers still on top of the AL West. And the Angels are now just a few games above 500. So they're treading water a little bit. You can't say it's Shohei Ohtani, though, because he now is up to 31 home runs, most in Major League Baseball, and 68 RBI. We're not even to the All-Star break yet.
What he's done and what he's meant to this team, obviously it's immeasurable. He's been big for us, and the best part is that these guys are having fun doing it, and, he's playful with his teammates, and he's really having a good time out here.
I do love to see him smile. I love to see the joyfulness and the camaraderie with him and his Angels teammates. I would love for him to stay in Los Angeles with the Angels, not with the Dodgers. It seems like so often that there's a handful of teams in baseball that collect the talent, the top superstars. And I think it's great that the Angels have two, but yes, they do need to make the playoffs for the first time since 2014. Now, while we're talking about the NL West, some question about Clayton Kershaw, even as he is named to his 10th All-Star roster. So the pitchers were announced on Sunday. And Clayton Kershaw, who started last year in L.A., this year's game is in Seattle. You've got his 10th appearance. And I hope he's healthy for it. because he really has been the mainstay of the Dodgers roster for the last decade. But this year, as they've had so many injuries to their starting rotation, Julio Urias came back on, was it Friday or Saturday, and got shelled. So they really need him. Now, he took himself out of his last start, remember? There wasn't a particular body part, at least not that Clayton told us. He said it was more that he just didn't feel right. Dave Roberts felt like it was about them asking him for so many innings. It was really more about the fact that they'd been riding him so hard. Will he make his start on Monday against the Pirates?
I will say that there was progress. What that means, you know, for the start tomorrow, I just don't want to say right now. You know, there's some things that we have to think through. If he starts, if we give him a couple extra days to kind of kick the can. So right now, for me, watching him throw the baseball, he hasn't thrown a pen, didn't throw a pen, didn't spin the baseball, but there was progress. He felt better. So that's encouraging.
That's Dave Roberts before the Dodgers game on Sunday. So Kershaw with his 10th All-Star appearance, only Mike Trout has more on this roster with 11. And I love this element or this stat from the All-Star rosters. 42 first or second time selections, 26 of them, 26 players will be in the All-Star game for the first time ever. That is great for baseball. An infusion of young talent, exciting talent, not just the ability to hit, but also run. And the more you can incorporate young stars, fresh faces, like Julio Rodriguez from last year, right? And how much fun he was. The more you can incorporate the young talent from around the country, the more you can attract young fans and expand the fan base. And it is taking place in Seattle. Not sure if you saw Sunday Night Baseball, but Pete Alonso announces that he will compete in another home run derby, which is also cool. Bombs away, baby, bombs away. It's after hours here on CBS Sports Radio. By the way, of the highest payroll in baseball history, only Pete Alonso will be in Seattle. He's the only All-Star from the Mets. The Braves, in that same NL East division as the Mets, have 8 guys going to Seattle, the most of any team in more than a decade, the most of any National League team since 2008. And why? Well, because right now the Braves seemingly cannot lose.
Alcantara delivers, swing, and a drive to right field. That's got a chance to get out of here. Soler at the wall. It's gone. Home run, Ozzy. Braves lead 4-2.
Huge run down there for Iglesias and the Braves when he comes on in the ninth. And Travis hits one well to right. Soler back to the wall. Here comes the insurance you wanted. A 2-run homer by D'Arnaud. And the Braves pad the lead here in the eighth on the long ball by Travis D'Arnaud.
It's not just about the hitting. It's not just about the home runs, though there were more home runs against the Marlins, their top competitor, if you can call them that, in the NL East. The Braves now have 8 consecutive wins with 3 homers. But Spencer Strider, another quality start into the 7th inning. He picks up his 10th win to go along with 9 strikeouts. And we knew the Braves were the best team in the National League, right? So they've been setting the pace in the NL for a while now. But did you know they're also, thanks to this June, early July surge, on the heels of the Rays as best record in baseball overall?
It's still early in the season. They're all big games. So, we kind of show up every day and try to just kind of be as level-headed as we can. And, we kind of think of the first half as practice for the second half in a way. So we like where we are, and we're doing a good job of treating each day as its own sort of task, and like to carry it into the next half.
As you hear on Braves Radio is Ozzie Albies with a 2-run blast in the 5th that gave Atlanta the lead over the previously hot Marlins, stymied the Marlins for the Braves 8 straight, but also 16 of their last 17, and everybody's pitching in.
It feels really good. You know, more importantly, to win the series is more important to me than the 8 in a row. The 8 in a row is cool, but the 9 series in a row is what it's all about.
Since day one, they've been aggressive, you know, against us, against our pitchers, you know. But we know it. We just got to keep positive, you know, get to Miami tonight, you know, try to not think about it, you know, and try to win the next couple games that we have before the break.
If you look at the standings now, and the Rays have backpedaled a little bit, the Orioles are within 5.5 games. Orioles are also falling back. So the pace, the early pace, tough to maintain. The Rays are sitting at 57 wins and 30 losses. So they're already at 87 games. That's well past the midway point of the season. The Rangers, The Rangers are at 50 wins, in case you're keeping score at home. The Braves are now at 56 wins. So they're 3 ahead in the loss column and only 1 game back in the win column. Now, if you're going by win percentage, the Braves actually have the better record, but I was looking at wins. The Rays have had the most wins in baseball for almost the entire regular season to this point. The Braves are nipping at their heels now. 16 of 17, 8 in a row, and we have seen this before from Atlanta. Speaking of young superstars and a great collection of talent. All right, on Twitter, A-Law Radio. Our Facebook page, too, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Love to hear from you where you're listening and what you're up to this holiday weekend. We'll be here, of course, but there will be funfetti and cupcakes and the latest video version of Ask Amy Anything, which could be posted any second now. Straight ahead, it's become not just an annual holiday celebration for one manager in Major League Baseball, but really it's become a very common occurrence, almost weekly, if you will.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Out a terrific major league career as a number three starter, and someone just got tossed from the Yankee dugout. Dan Merzel presumably tossing Aaron Boone for arguing balls and strikes on the LeMahieu at bat.
Well, is it him or somebody else yelling? Let's see how angry he is.
It looks pretty heated, and it's only begun, Susan.
Well,
oh, yeah, it's intensifying.
Well, we're seeing who, so he wouldn't be talking like that. Well, out comes Lance Barksdale.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Interesting, because I swear I shortened that and edited that cut, but we got a little Susan Waldman on the end. Just cut her right off. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Aaron Boone has made a living of it, being tossed out of games. This time it was the third inning as he's arguing balls and strikes. Fifth time this season, and you know what? He just thinks it's overkill.
You got to have a little bit of room to let us say something. We said one thing, hand up, not out. And that's just... That's wrong in my opinion, especially coming from what I think's got a chance to be a really good young umpire. You know, that's ridiculous. I thought we had some at bats, and you know, I mean, obviously I get tossed there, and I feel like DJ works a walk there, and you know, it's a big point in that game. First and second, one out. All of a sudden, now in an inning where he's throwing a lot of pitches, maybe it turns a little bit different.
The he that he's referring to is former Yankee Jordan Montgomery. Remember when Jordan got traded from the Yankees to the Cardinals? Well, this is the second time that he's beaten the Yankees since that move was made. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. Aaron Boone, Yankees Radio Network with Justin Shackle and Susan Waldman. And that was the highlight for the Yankees. But for the Cardinals, who are desperately seeking wins, not making a whole lot of noise. They're way below 500 and at the bottom of the NL Central. They will take the win. The Yankees are a team that, you look at them compared to the Rays, have not been able to make up any ground, even though every team in the AL East is above 500 and is part of the wild card, the problem is there's so much competition in your own division. They were the team last year that every other team was trying to track down. Remember, they started out like a house on fire and then came back to the pack, but did manage to hold off the East and win the American League, or win that division. We'll see if they can put things together once Aaron Judge returns. But right now, it's about treading water. Judge is around. He's in the dugout. Smiles a lot. He roots for his teammates. But will he be part of the All-Star festivities in Seattle?
It's still a ways away, so we really haven't got to that point yet. So we'll see how we continue to progress, and then we'll get to that point.
In other words, I got nothing. I got nothing for you. Gerrit Cole loses on Sunday to his former teammate, but he is also named an All-Star. And really, he didn't pitch poorly. He gave up, let's see, 2 runs on 6 hits. He went through 6, which seems to be the standard these days. But there really was no offense to speak of for the Yankees. So he is at 8-2, and he is definitely heading to the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, congratulations from your teammates. And, you know, like I said, a lot of them deserve a lot of credit for, you know, us playing as well as we have. It's special. I mean, I got to prepare for next week's start at the same time, but it's a good feeling.
It is always cool to see those videos where the managers in the clubhouses let guys know that they are All-Stars. If you haven't seen them, they're all over social media this weekend. Now, the starters were unveiled on Thursday. We had the starters on Thursday night before the show. But now we were hearing about pitchers and also getting the reserves and the rosters being filled out. And especially when you have so many first-timers, it's really cool to be able to see their reactions inside the clubhouses and to hear them and to know that it's such a special moment for them, an unforgettable moment for them, really represents a dream come true. Speaking of dreams coming true, Ricky Fowler finally, after 4+ years, ends his drought on the PGA Tour and in a playoff is able to hold off Adam Hadwin, Colin Morikawa, and capture another PGA Tour win, his 6th, but again, hasn't happened since Super Bowl Sunday of 2019. That's pre-pandemic.
It's just nice to have this one out of the way. I'm obviously going to soak this one in and celebrate a bit. It's just been a long road, and yeah, I'll get emotional at some point, whether it's I already did up there to in here or when we're heading home or over this next week. We're just going to be home for a couple days. We're actually heading over to London with JT and Jordan and our wives. So, yeah, we should have fun.
When he says JT, he's referring to Justin Thomas and also Jordan Spieth. Those three are like the three musketeers. They hang out a lot together. They travel together. They play together. They play golf together. And now finally, he can feel as though he's got this huge weight lifted off his shoulders that won't actually bring down the plane. I'm not sure if you saw his emotion, his display at the end of the Rocket Mortgage Classic in this first playoff hole. It was maybe understated, except it made so much sense for Ricky. He just tilted his head back and let out what was a humongous exhale, as in, I can finally stop holding my breath. The relief and the release doesn't crumble this time. Remember the last two tournaments he's had opportunities, the U.S. Open, the Travelers, he was in position and just could not close it out on the final day. So maybe, just maybe, those experiences of the last month put him in position to capitalize on this win and this opportunity in Detroit.
Any situation prior helps, but the more recent, the better. I've been in contention, plenty of times, and I've won, and I've also not played well or been close and not been able to convert. But definitely over the last couple of weeks, with LA and then last week, I felt better and played better, just didn't score. But it was ultimately, you know, too far back, and Keegan played very well throughout the whole week. So, yeah, the last 2 weekends definitely helped going into today.
He still wants to win a major, of course. He still covets a major championship. Then you can imagine he would say his career is complete, right? Not that he will ever stop trying, but that's the one resume item. That's the one line on his resume that he does not have. And he's come close. He's come so close. A bunch of runner-ups, so many top five finishes. But at least he's able to check this off the list. A win after 96 starts. And now maybe a little bit of a springboard for moving forward to the British Open.
This is definitely one of the main goals this year was to win. You know, outside of that was obviously, you know, playing well and doing what I've been doing, you know, to plan to make it to the Tour Championship. And kind of the one of the end goals was to be a part of the Ryder Cup team, and that's still what we're focusing on right now.
Not sure if you watched any of this Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit, but for some reason, Detroit's a hotbed of Ricky Fowler fans. There was Oklahoma State orange everywhere because he went to OSU, and there were chants of Ricky, Ricky, which is fun. And I've told you, I think he's a sentimental favorite because of the fact that he's been always a bridesmaid, never a bride in the major. So he will continue to be a sentimental favorite, but also one that people really love to cheer for. As for Colin Morikawa, he comes up just short in that playoff.
Playoffs suck when you're on the wrong side of them.
What?
You know, you put everything you want into it and it comes down to one hole, but that's what golf is. You know, you got to perform, you got to execute the shots, and we did a lot of that really good this week. It was awesome to see. Haven't seen that through 72 holes in a while. And I still wouldn't have changed anything about hole 18 in regulation and the playoff. I truly thought I hit the perfect shot, and just was a little juice, went a little far, and just didn't really have the putter in the hand. Not that the chip wasn't possible, but it would have been nice to have the putter in the hand. So overall, you know, still pretty proud of myself.
Yeah, you should be. A -8 on Sunday, a near record final round for him is what got him into the playoff. But Ricky Fowler, he needed one. Boy, did he desperately need one. He got married and had his first child since his last win. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
Introducing L2R, smarter, safer, faster.com. Your solution to combat the negative effects of sitting at a desk. Sitting at a desk 8 hours a day is as harmful as smoking. If you're stuck at a desk all day, you don't need to quit your job. You need to join our Desk to 5K program. No running experience is required. As a doctor of physical therapy, I'll be honored to guide you every step of the way to reach your running and fitness goals. Let's conquer running together and make it enjoyable. Visit L2R, smarter, safer, faster.com and start moving today.